Okay, we're joined on the line by Nuria. Now, Nuria, I don't know your second name, but I think the message is generally more important than the people who are than the actual names. Although I'm sure you're absolutely brilliant, like everybody. I think we're here today to talk about Islam, and we'll just knock out the music completely in the background because I think it's although it's a lot to be celebrated about Islam, I think the music might be a little bit inconvenient for concentration and stuff. I think Eid was celebrated. I don't know what days it was celebrated in Ireland because it seems to vary, I think, and what days people celebrate it. Well, let's explain. Ramadan is a month-long celebration in Islam that goes on generally in our months during the month of November. And when the new moon comes along, that is when the Eid festival, that's when people can go back to normal eating. But can you explain, we'll just explain Ramadan, I suppose, first, that people fast from...
Certainly, yes. We celebrate the month of Ramadan as Muslims, but it's not actually a month of celebration. The celebration is the festival at the end of Ramadan, which is the Eid festival, which lasted three days. Mm-hmm. In Ireland, we celebrated it from Saturday, Sunday, Monday. The month of Ramadan this year was 29 days. It follows the lunar calendar as opposed to the solar calendar. It's a month of fasting. On the outer level, it's a fasting from food and drink, and sexual activity and smoking, of course, including drinking water. You can't drink water. It's the time for the fast is during daylight hours, and that's from before sunrise, actually. It's from dawn. It's about an hour and a bit before sunrise, from dawn until sunset. The purpose of the month is it's a month of purification and of worship, and people, as well as the issues I just mentioned, it's a month of taking reckoning of your actions, of taking stock of where you're going virtually, of cleansing your thoughts. It's not just, I mean, there's a saying of our Prophet that says, for some people there is no gain for them from the fast except a hungry belly. And that's a reflection of the depth that is required.
So it's not just a ritual, you've got to feel it as well. Is there any resonance between this and, for instance, Catholic penance? You know the way people go around Lough Derg, for instance, on their knees?
Yeah, I'm sure the route is the same. The only difference is in Islam, there is no self-mortification in Islam. There is no idea that we should punish ourselves at all. In fact, it is prohibited for a sick person to fast. If a sick person fasts, they are committing a sin. If a person fasts and harms themselves in any way, then that is a sin. So the idea of, you know, of punishing ourselves, it's not a punishment, it's actually a purification. I mean, we notice, you know, people go on retreats for health reasons or whatever, and usually we are advised to take a fast. And the load of the food in the body normally obstructs a lot of our activities and prevents us really from seeing our desires, our impulses, our attachments very clearly. And the month of Ramadan is an opportunity to do that, to reflect on our attachments, on our weaknesses, on our compulsive behavior, on our, you know, indecent thoughts, and our suspiciousness towards other people, towards ourselves, and our, you know, motivation in our actions. It basically takes it back to the root and reflects everything back to us, and we can reflect on where we are and our progress on the spiritual path.
Now, Islam means peace, but Ramadan, for instance, is about discipline, I suppose, and disciplining yourself from worldly or earthly sort of pleasures, is it?
Well, it is. As I said, the idea is that the pleasures that we have, we don't consider them as a burden. The pleasures that God has given us, God, by the way, in Islam, is not a male or a female, is the creator of male and female, is not a thing or an entity, is the essence and the source. And the idea is that... Sorry, can you just repeat your question there?
Oh, no, I was just wondering about the whole thing with discipline and Islam.
Yeah.
Self-discipline, for instance, not to... probably overindulge in and to take reckoning of where we're coming from, because in the last documentary we heard about the materialism that is gathering throughout the world.
I mean, absolutely, that is, in fact, that's at the essence of it, that we are not meant to waste anything, and waste including our actions, including our motivations, but certainly as far as the material world is concerned, we are meant to have a discipline and have an understanding of why we act in certain ways, and not to use any more than we need. Islam forbids us, for example, when we cleanse ourselves in the ritual wash five times a day, and we are not permitted to waste water. You know, and there's a saying of the Prophet that don't waste water, even if you are at an abundant river.
So you pray five times a day, and before praying, you have to go through the ritual washing.
It's a ritual wash. I mean, as I say, there's again an outer and an inner meaning of it. I mean, on the outer meaning is you pass water, you wash your hands, and you pass water over your face, just rub your head and your neck, your ears and your feet, and it's as well as the actual cleansing of it. The meaning of it is that when you do, you have sealed yourself with water. Water is the life element, and water, contact with water also activates these centers in our bodies that a lot of our chakras are in as well, our sources of energy. But also that we've sealed ourselves before we go to the prayers, mm-hmm. that we will see nothing but by God. We will hear nothing but by God. We will smell nothing but by God. We will say nothing mm-hmm. but by God. We will take nothing but by God. We will move towards nothing mm-hmm. but by God.
Well, I know our time is sort of limited, so we will go on to the five pillars quite quickly, but I know this is, I suppose, for want of a better word, a rough guide to Islam. It's strange having a rough guide to peace, more or less, which is very unusual. But I want to ask you, maybe the whole thing, but water traditionally has a spiritual symbol, symbol of the soul, perhaps.
Yes.
But in Saudi Arabia, for instance, where probably Islam originated, yes. That water would have been in shortage anyway, which probably would have probably explained the reverence for water as well, I suppose.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you do go to... I mean, I've been to different deserts, and in the desert, you see how dependent we are on this source that we take for granted here in Ireland, for example. However, should something happen and the earth's balance, and should all the water be corrupted, as it can happen, the balance is very, very fragile, and it could happen. What will we do then? Mm-hmm. So the idea is constantly reconnecting us to the source and emphasizing the importance of being in gratitude and appreciating what we have, at the same time using it in the correct manner.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know there are five pillars of Islam. Okay, now one may be, for instance, that there is only one God and that God is Allah, and maybe two is...
I would like to clarify that.
Okay.
The first pillar of Islam is the Shahada, which what you've just said. Mm-hmm. It actually means the bearing witness that there is only one God. Mm-hmm. However, it does not mean that his name is Allah. No.
Oh.
It means there is only one source.
Okay.
La ilaha illallah does not mean there is no God but Allah.
Okay.
It means there is no source but the one source. There is no truth but the one truth. There is no essence but the one essence.
All right.
And that is very important because, for example, the Christians in my country where I come from, Iraq, I have Catholic cousins, and they worship Allah as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're Catholics, but yeah. they worship Allah. Allah is the word for God in Arabic.
Yeah, that's so, very absolutist, though, isn't it? I mean, the Catholic religion, generally speaking, said there was only one truth, and that's why people got burned at the stake for saying that the world wasn't flat. The earth wasn't flat. It's very absolutist type of philosophy to say that there's only one truth. I mean, there are some people who believe there are many truths depending on the perspectives.
No, what we believe is that there is only, that all truths, if you like, all relative truths stem from the one truth, that
okay,
we are
one source.
In our humanity.
Yeah, okay, one source. Okay,
yes, one source.
Good. I suppose the Hajj is another one of the pillars.
Yeah, so the first one is the bearing witness of the one God, and the second part of the bearing witness is that all prophets, including the Prophet Muhammad, are prophets and messengers of God. We are taught that there are many thousands of prophets that are sent to many people whose names we don't know. So we don't assume that any people are left without a prophet or a messenger to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is the Salat, which means the connection, which means the ritual worship five times a day.
Okay.
The prayer. The third part is the Zakat, which is the purification of the money. It is a 2.5%. This is not charity. This is obligatory on every Muslim to give 2.5% of what they have. Poor people are not, of course, obliged to do that. Charity is incumbent upon Muslims on top of that. That's mm-hmm. up to you how much you give.
Okay.
The fourth aspect is the fasting month of Ramadan.
Okay.
And the fifth aspect is the pilgrimage, which is the purifying your intention, really. It's the purification of your intention. It's the pilgrimage to Mecca for those who are able to do it.
Okay. And there are some subsections, I believe, because I was speaking to a Muslim from Indonesia who told me about the five pillars, which I hadn't heard of those. I don't know if they're in the Quran, but it's very useful for people, for instance, who are not literate, for instance, and that they can use these as a guideline, and it's very flexible.
Yes.
For instance, in Indonesia, the imam is respected, but he's just an advisor that basically they make up their own minds. Everybody's equally
absolutely
good Muslim.
Yes.
Yeah. There are some of the subsections are, for instance, he was telling me, if you've done something in this life which will help somebody when you're dead, whether it's building a house or doing anything that will live on after you,
yeah.
that is considered to be very good.
Yeah, I mean, what we believe that our actions are ended with the end of our lives, that we carry with us what we have achieved in our life here, whatever station of conflict or station of peace we have reached at the end of our life, we carry with us to the next life. Mm-hmm. However, there are three avenues through which a person's action continues after their death. One of them is an act of charity, an ongoing charity. For example, building a school or a hospital, or even in some Muslim countries, you see people who have water, centers for water where passers-by can drink water in the desert. This is an ongoing charity. The second aspect of it, that is if a person leaves behind useful knowledge, books, again, an institution or some kind of knowledge, or teaches somebody something that is passed on. Useful knowledge is a second act of charity that is ongoing and beneficial to a human being after they die. And the third act is if you have children and you raise them to be truthful and honest and God-loving and God-conscious, then that is ongoing as well for you.
Even if some people probably believe God to be nature and nature to be God, because there may be some overlaps in the concept, perhaps. God as an interventionist, some people would say that God, the way he's portrayed, is a reflection of people's conscience and little more.
Well, in Islam, we believe there are as many paths to God, which we call Allah, to the God, to the source, as there are human beings.
Right.
The role of the religions was really just as a guide for most people. Most people do find it useful to have some kind of a path that other people have trodden on before them. That is the role of religion, but there are, that's on the outside. But on the inside, the spiritual path is completely private and personal and different, to different people.
So is it possible to be a good Muslim and an atheist at the same time, then?
That's quite funny, because what do you mean by an atheist? Not to believe in any God?
Not to believe in God, but perhaps people believe in, for instance, goodness and humanity, in believing that nature, as maybe, for instance, I'm just taking a perspective, maybe people believe in empathy, for instance. Maybe they believe in the one source of knowledge, which is just, but they may not actually, they may disagree on maybe the use of the word God. They just have a different version, like you say.
But that's fine. As far as using the word atheist, it's somebody who doesn't believe in anything apart from, I have atheist friends, and their definition of atheism is something that doesn't transcend the material world.
Right.
As far as being a good Muslim primarily means being in peaceful submission to the source, to the one, to whatever that one is. And you want to call it Allah, you want to call it Krishna, you want to call it whatever you want to call it, whatever name you want to call it, you want to call it Christ. I suppose that would be difficult to be an atheist and a good Muslim, because you're immediately denying the one source.
Although it's not a submissive religion insofar as people, for instance, in Uyghur, in China, for instance, people are willing to stand up and try to defend themselves against one of the largest armies in the world, and throughout the world you can see it in Chechnya, perhaps, and the similar type of bravery and that people will have, and probably that has other repercussions, but we won't go completely there because we've only got 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
Just enough time to ask you the difference between Sunni and Shiite Muslim.
Yes, these differences, I think, are similar to differences arose in Christianity, but maybe less sectarian, in the sense that we are all Muslims. The differences arose out of political allegiances. Spiritually, we have the one Quran. The Sunni and the Shia will tell you there is the one Quran, we have the one final prophet, and we believe in all the other prophets. We believe Jesus was the word of God and his spirit. However, we do not believe he was the son of God or God on earth. We believe he was his spirit and his word made flesh and a prophet.
It strikes me that Sunni Islam is more like Protestantism and Shia Islam is more like Catholicism, in that there's a hierarchy in Shia.
That is true. That is, there is an element in there. There is some kind of a hierarchy, what they call the Marja'iyya and Shia. The Sunni don't have that, really. But even for the Shia, ultimately it is a private matter, and the path that you choose and who you choose to listen to, your leader, your spiritual guide, is ultimately, it's up to you whether you listen to him or not, because your contact with the divine is direct. You don't need any intermediaries.
Yeah, and not to carry the analogy too far, maybe in Sunni Islam you have maybe extreme, or people who would be analogous to Puritans in Protestantism, which would be the Wahhabis, and maybe you've got Sufi and you've got Druze. What's the difference between Sufi and Druze? What are they?
The Druze themselves, they will tell you that they were originally a Shia sect, if you like, but they kind of... They, they left, in a way, they did leave Islam. They've gone to other areas. They do believe, I think, in the basic principles of Islam, but they have their own secret doctrine, which is only revealed to members of their community at the age of 40. They're actually, they don't classify themselves as Muslims. As far as the Sufis, we consider the Prophet Muhammad to be the first true Sufi. The Sufi only means to be somebody who is in constant God consciousness and internal contact with the divine, with God. That's all that a Sufi is. Some of the, I mean, with the analogy you had of the Puritans and the Wahhabis, you know, stand absolutely. But again, a lot of them are this idea that people are going to come back and restore the original faith. However, as Muslims, we do have the original faith because the life of the Prophet is preserved, and the Quran is the same Quran that was revealed 1,425 years ago.
Are you, you're Sufi yourself, are you?
That's right.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, I'm a Muslim.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And a part of what I practice is the tasawwuf, which is one aspect of realizing God consciousness.
Yeah. Again, we've very little time, and I'd like to ask you about some hedonism, or maybe some aspects of Sufism, like the whirling dervishes, perhaps, that come, you know, the whole idea of losing yourself to great celebrations and enjoyment of life as well. But
that's probably a myth. That's actually not accurate. I don't know if you've ever been to a whirling dervish ceremony.
I have not, no.
There's no hedonism in it. Uh-huh. As I say, Islam believes that the gift of sexuality, the gift of being able to enjoy food, that the gifts of being able to enjoy your senses are gifts, and they are not to be repressed or denied, but they are to be regulated, and they have certain avenues to be enjoyed. But as far as the whirling dervishes are concerned, their idea is unity with God, annihilation of the ego. It is that if you attend it, you realize it's a very spiritual and a very somber ceremony. It is not nihilistic. It's not hedonistic in the least.
All right. Okay. And it's just. Finally, the final question I have, and I know it's probably a complex question to ask you in about 1 minute to sum up, are divisions between Islam, between different parts of Islam, that strong, for instance, that Iraq would be separating into different republics? No, the Kurdish question is different.
But here, I'll just answer you, Robbie. Mm-hmm. Since the occupation and the, you know, barbaric war on my country started over 19 months ago, from the beginning, the Americans were saying, oh, the Iraqis are going to kill each other. We have to be there. They're going to kill each other. The fact is, Iraq was the first truly multicultural society in history. We have religions that people here haven't even heard of, that have continued to exist for thousands of years, and that Islam as a state religion protected completely. We have, I mean, there have been frictions, but my goodness me, I have friends who are Yazidis, Druze, Catholics, Assyrians, Muslims, whether Sunni or Shi'i, many others that I can name you that you wouldn't know about here.
Okay.
And we are intermarried, we have, you know, our genealogy is mixed,
sure.
We have communities that have traded and gotten on with each other, and I don't think it's going to happen despite all the efforts of outside forces to create friction. I believe we are going to hold on.
Okay, well, maybe pan-Arabism rather than the artificial structure of Iraq, or who knows, but anyway, it's a very long question. Maybe that's another interview in itself, Nuria, and maybe we'll talk again some other time. But thank you very much for speaking
with
us today,
Robbie.
And actually that's all we have time for on Majority World today, and I've been Robbie Sinnott, and opposite me is John Doyle. The programme originally went out between 4:30 and 5:30 on a Thursday evening, goes out again between 9 and 10 on a Friday morning. I'm rushing again as usual, and contact us, please write to us at majorityworld@yahoo.ie, and absolutely love to hear from you all. And in the meantime, have a good one.